Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm your radio show. I'm your radio show.
Hello and welcome to the Niall or Nine podcast. It is Niall and Andrea talking about music on our regular podcast chat. Andrea, how are you?
I'm good. I don't know if I'm going to be able to either match or keep up the energy that you're bringing, but I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Hello, everyone. Yes, I have cut my hair. Yeah, I can see you all.
Looks good.
I have cut it. Thank you very much. Yeah. It was nearly to my waist. It is now above my shoulders, and I feel like I can run faster and feel like a little fancy poodle.
Very good. A little fancy poodle. Feeling.
Little very fancy good. Poodle. I like she's that. Had it. She's. I have not attended a hairdresser. I very much did it myself. And if you could see it, you'd know that.
Looks good. But just wanted, good. Good
wanted
job.
To get that out of the way. Niall said I look like the cartoon version of myself, which I took as a very, very high compliment. So thank you for that.
In a good way. In a really good way.
Yeah. In you a know, good way.
You like because you're identifiable. That's why. You know
yes.
what I mean? You get it. You get it.
So today, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We're not playing any music.
On this podcast, we're not playing any music. We're going to talk about, I think something, a topic that we kind of avoided for a while because it's so big and so vast and hard to like comprehend in one go, but we're going to try. This is all coming from a specific news that's happening in the last week. So we're going to talk about streaming, music streaming and the Broken Record campaign. And why this is happening at the moment, what is happening around it, what is the problem with streaming, why are people criticizing it, what do they want from, what changes do people want, and contextualizing all the things that are happening in terms of recorded music and releases and money and revenue for artists and the trickle down and whatever happens with artists in terms of money. So
we'll be kind of mostly talking about Spotify in this episode, but a lot of the spoiler criticisms that will be leveled against Spotify also applies to other kind of streaming platforms. It's just a little bit easier to kind of speak about these things in terms of Spotify. So
Spotify is the big streaming service, obviously.
He's the big boy.
So we're going to talk about that. So before we delve in too deep into that, I'd just like to say if you like what we do here, and many of you people out there sent us a nice message about the Italo Disco podcast last week. Aww. We really appreciate it. Patreon.com/99 if you want to support us from a fiver a month. It's all there, and we have a lovely Discord where we're having chats with people, as we keep saying, and it's been really
hi
nice.
Discord
so yeah, we were talking about best album openers on Discord, which I might do my own playlist of. I think I actually have started it already. I've got 50 tracks, but it was a fun thing to do. I listened to like 50 my favorite album openers last night, so I had a really good time doing that. So patreon.com/99 if you want to support that, and 99.com otherwise. So okay, the Broken Record campaign, it's in the news at the moment. I'm going to talk a little bit why that is happening. First of all, obviously for musicians in the last year, But like everybody else, there's been a pandemic. We haven't been able to play live. They haven't been able to do anything in terms of make money. And like live is really where musicians make their money and has been in the last 10, 15 years. And with the decline in the CD era, we got, you know, the likes of Napster and all of the illegal download software and all that kind of stuff that that proliferated, and Metallica and all that kind of stuff, LimeWire and all those kind of services that weren't licensed. And then Spotify rose from the ashes of those illegal download and dodgy like sites and stuff, and became a legitimate platform for people to hear music. And of course, while Spotify is great in terms of its listening and the fact that you can access it very cheaply or for free with ads, it does have issues, and it has long had issues in terms of how it pays out artists as well. But when you have a situation where artists are no longer making huge money, or they can't rely on the income from recorded music because they used to be able to sell CDs, or, I mean, vinyl's doing quite well, but still, requires manufacturing and distribution and all the costs associated with that. Streaming is a digital service. And so the Broken Record campaign is a campaign that was started by Tom Gray, who is, you may know as one of the members of the band Gomez, the Mercury Prize winning band. So he has direct experience in record label deals. And what we're going to start with is really like going back to, you know, this was all been talked about for the last few years, but it really, because of the lack of income in the last year for musicians, it really highlighted just how little streaming returns in terms of revenue to the songwriters and artists who make that music. So Tom Gray started the Broken Record campaign, and the very start of this comes back to one of the main issues at the heart of the campaign, goes right back to the heady days of the music business. So we're talking like the 60s and 70s and 50s even, when bands were signed to major labels and given a recoupment deal, which he described as a non-ethical exploitative deal. So what is a recoupment deal? A lot of the time, so what happens is a major label will give a contract to an artist saying, we're going to give you an advance of this kind, this amount of money. And that is an advance for what comes next, the money you make. So he describes it as a curious form of investment in which an artist has to pay back all the money that is spent on them through their share of the stream or sale. So an artist gives up their intellectual property to copyright to a label to exploit and use. But at the same time, what is supposed to happen is, say an artist gets, say Frank Ocean, whatever. So just pick an artist for
me.
Yeah, Andrea Cleary's Sad Girl Summer project gets 200,000 euro advance because the label thinks that her Sad Girl Summer songs are gonna sell by the bucket load and make them lots of money. Right? So that's what's obviously happened. You get 200,000. So what happens is, the expectation is that once the artist makes that money back, that 200,000, then they will get earn royalties. But that's not really what happens, because what really happens is,
because nobody bought my Sad Girl Summer project.
So your Sad Girl Summer project is massively successful. Andrea Cleary is clearing up everywhere. But
amazing.
So she's made the money back. But what happens is then, all the costs associated with that release, the marketing, the videos, the artwork, the photo shoots, manufacturing, distribution, reissues, merch, deluxe versions, all of those will be offset by the advance against the advance that you have been paid. The money you got up front will never really stop being owed, because they're just piling on the costs on the other side.
Okay, right.
So you're never going to really earn royalties from the advance. Is the money you're basically going, you're never going to see anything
so
else.
So I'll only earn royalties once my label has kind of broken even. on the advance that they gave me, and on top of that also the costs associated with everything you just mentioned there, like merch and tours marketing and so on. Is that the case?
Yeah, well, that's if you're in a 360 deal where they also the label also takes a cut of the merch and everything that is non-recorded as well. Generally speaking, we know that a million streams doesn't offer much money, but typically in the kind of major label deals, an artist has traditionally got about 15 to 20% of the amount returned from a stream. It's very rare for an artist to get 50-50 from a label. The money that you are earning for the label is always going to be offset against the advance, the money that the artist receives up front. This is how they've operated for many, many years, right? They've operated in this way. They give you money up front. They glamour you with, you know, if they take you out for dinner, That goes against your advance. That's expenses. That goes against, like, so all of this money, studio time, all those things that they are paying for is going back on your account, essentially, that you're paying off. Tom Gray has a direct experience of that with his band Gomez, talking about signing to a label, getting dropped, but in the meantime, the label releasing reissues of the versions of his albums, and that was always resetting and going back on their advance, so they never really made any money. So the main thing now is that because an artist gets such a tiny amount from streaming, if he even gets to that point, that it's never going to knock off any of that money. It's very obviously a structural problem. Mm-hmm. So even when in a time where people are actually spending more money on music in terms of like Spotify subscriptions every month, blah, blah, over across the board, it's still, there's not enough money to go around. There are three big major labels, Universal, Sony and Warner. So a lot of the deals we're talking about are to do with them, but it's not just them. It's also the independent labels as well. One of the problems is, say, for example, here's a good example, right? Drake was the most streamed artist on the planet in 2019, and only a third of his income comes from streaming. So that tells you how broken the system is, because if you're not making enough money as the most streamed artist on the planet, then something's got to go wrong. And then you go right back to a small independent 4 or 5 piece band who are splitting the tiny amount that they get back. You're talking about peanuts, right?
So Spotify is really not transparent at all about how artists actually get paid per stream. It can depend from artist to artist, and it can depend on region, but the general ballpark is between 0.003 and 0.005, not of a dollar, of a cent.
So it's about a third of a penny or a third of a cent.
Yeah.
Euro cent.
And so you'll need around 250 streams to make a dollar. As you said, I mean, COVID-19 has obviously compounded this issue, and physical sales in America have fallen around 23%, according to the Recording Industry Association of America. And then this, obviously, on top of revenue from tours, etc., streaming revenue has kind of become very much essential for people who are trying to make music off of their music. So Spotify pays their artists monthly from their net revenue collected from ads and premium subscription fees. So if you're not paying for Spotify, the ads that you're listening to are your payment, and Spotify will collect money from those people who are paying for ads. If you are paying for Spotify, like I am, like you are, then that money is going to go into a big pool. So when Spotify pays these artists, they tally the total number of streams for each of the artist's songs. They determine who owns each song, and then they distribute that money throughout. So the first people that get paid are the rights holders, and then it is the distributor, which might be the same as the rights holder, but isn't always. And then finally, it's the artist. So Spotify take about 20% of their revenue, and they distribute it this way. They keep 30% for themselves because they're a business. And then so that 70% goes to the rights holders, who then pay artists based on the agreements that they have between one another. In the conversation that we're having here, we're not going to go into agreements between artists and their rights holders, but that is a conversation that I think is worth having, because there's some shady shit going on there as well, but it's beyond the scope of this episode, I reckon. According to David McCandless, he figured out that an artist on Spotify would need over 4 million streams per month to earn the US minimum monthly wage of $1,160. Minimum wage, 4 million streams a month. And compared to streaming a song, downloading a song is estimated to be around 5.5 times more valuable for an artist than a stream. In August 2016, Music Business Worldwide reported that Spotify started paying producers to create music and place tracks on like kind of highly followed and popular playlists. And the playlisting is a, it's a big issue. I think we might actually come to playlisting in a little while when I talk about the listening experience. But to just go back to the payment model, it is a pro rata model, which means that all of the money is pooled together and distributed between the artists. And that starts with the artists who have the most streams. But you can imagine that this, like it does sound fair. If you have the most streams, then you should be paid the most. But when you look at big labels who have big catalogs, you know, the big three that you mentioned there, these are people who own the rights to like the Beatles music, to Michael Jackson's music, to Led Zeppelin, to these artists who are getting week on week, month on month, millions of streams, then it's hard to kind of find the incentive to release your song on Spotify when it's not only competing for space and money against everything else that is released that week and that month, but it's also competing against the entire back catalog of music that Spotify has. And you know, that is one of the really big things that Spotify has in its favor from a kind of a UI point of view, is that we will always say like, yes, streaming has its problems, but isn't it amazing to have the entire history of music at your fingertips? And I think that this is actually a major problem for artists when it comes to getting paid. And there doesn't seem to be an indication that Spotify intends to change their model so that maybe new artists or new releases are paid from in a kind of a different model or from a different area of whatever they're bringing in revenue wise. It's all just kind of lumped in. So it does mean then that labels with huge acts in their back catalog are getting a massive, massive slice of this pie coming in monthly without even really much of an incentive to release new music, because they're just earning money off their old music. And then new artists are kind of being left to scramble for what's left over after that, which can be, as we said, you know, a fraction of a cent per play. So it is really, really not a good system if you are a new artist. It's a great system if you are a label and you own the rights to music from people who are already dead and you can just pick it all up at the end of every month without having to do anything. So that's roughly how it breaks down.
Yeah, the scale of a catalog that a label or publisher has means that that is the scale model. That's why it works so well. For the major labels, who also have between 6-7% ownership, I think, in Spotify as well. Two of the Universal and Sony. Yeah, sorry, I did find out that Warner had sold. I did say they sold 100% their shares for $500 million. So apparently, over 2% stake. Yeah. Okay, so back to the Broken Record campaign and why it's in the news at the moment. In recent months, Broken Record had led to UK parliamentary inquiries into the economics of streaming, where executives from Spotify, Apple and Amazon were questioned by UK MPs about how streaming works. So it was basically people were going, the MPs were really trying to understand the economics of well, how the label system works, how streaming works, all that kind of stuff. Did you watch any of the inquiries at all? They were quite interesting, actually. I can't remember the MPs, but they seemed to show a very decent grasp for how things work, which was interesting as well.
It wasn't like when Mark Zuckerberg was speaking to Congress and they were like, "And what is it like? What does that mean?"
No, they weren't. They were a bit more clued in than that. Thank fuck.
Okay.
Yeah. What is this has all led to is 156 British artists have put out an open letter, calling on the Prime Minister to put the value of music back in the hands of the music makers. A load of people, Annie Lennox, Chris Martin, Paul McCartney, Gary Barlow, Kate Bush, Noel Gallagher, Boy George, loads of different people, Phil Coulter, all sorts of people, Quez, Kano, Mike Skinner of the Streets, we got Yanis from Foles, Hannah Peel, Loads and loads and loads and loads. Thurston Moore's on it. Field Music, Kate Nash, loads of different people. All signed this letter saying that basically they are asked, they're calling on the Prime Minister to do something about this. It says, for too long, streaming platforms, record labels and other internet giants have exploited performers and creators without rewarding them fairly. We must put the value of music back where it belongs, in the hands of music makers. Streaming is quickly replacing radio as our main means of music communication. However, the law has not kept up with the pace of technological change, and as a result, performers and songwriters do not enjoy the same protections as they do in radio. Today's musicians receive very little income from their performances. Most featured artists receive tiny fractions of a US cent per stream, and session musicians receive nothing at all. To remedy this, only two words need to change in the 1988 Copyright Designs and Patents Act. This will modernize the law. So they're actually asking for, this is the first step they're asking for, rather than trying to put a, the other things I've seen recently is trying to put a sort of a regulator, which also this letter talks about. They need a regulator for streaming and to ensure the lawful and fair treatment of music makers. That would be a regulatory body that could disallow those exploitative record label deals, which the record label business is built on, allow those to exist into the future. A regulator which could potentially stop that. They're asking for a 50-50 split in terms of how this works, in terms of the streaming returns, or rather than 15 or 20% or whatever it is. And that's the really the major thing they're asking this week. But the fact that so many high profile artists have put their name behind this means that this has really gathered a huge amount of steam in the last 6 months for sure. So it's really interesting because obviously the UK is a huge music business market, and with Brexit and all that stuff happening in the mix, they will have to now really consider how this works in the future, how streaming is going to work, how their industry is going to work. Are people going to be able to go there and play in the same way? Is it going to have the same attraction? So now that they are out of Europe, they are in a position, which funny enough, to look at this and see how this could actually affect the music business and the makers of music. The letter was backed by the Musicians Union and the Ivors Academy, collectively representing tens of thousands of UK performers, composers and songwriters. The hashtag Broken Record campaign, Tom Gray started it. You can see his Mr. Tom Gray on Twitter is his handle. And he got a lot of media attention for this week, didn't he?
He did. I heard him on Six Music, I think, towards the end of last week discussing it. And he's been on a few podcasts around the place as well.
Yeah. I think he started this about a year ago. And, you know, and I've looked at it a lot. And I think because a lot of the times, because it's fact and figures and it's difficult things to understand, even like I've worked a bit with publishers here and there. And you're like, even you have to remind yourself constantly how it works and what it is and how licensing works and all that kind of stuff. So he has a pinned, Mr. Tom Gray on Twitter has a pinned thread explaining how musicians get paid and royalties and licenses and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the problem with why the system as it is in currently in place and it is exploited by major record labels still exists, because it's not a willful ignorance, but it's kind of like an obfuscated, you know, system that kind of, there's not a lot of transparency in it. You don't know how many people, what, you don't get to see the label deals, you don't get to see artist deals, you don't really know what's happening. So the fact now that the UK is asking for equitable remuneration means that they're looking for a 50-50 split between labels and artists, as opposed to from streaming services, from streaming revenue. So that would entail legislation, because they needed to actually ask. The only people that can do that are the politicians themselves, and maybe that is one of the main reasons why the open letter exists. So that is one thing that's happening, the Broken Record. And at the same time, nearly every day there's an article about from an artist who details their, you know, Spotify streaming numbers and their rate, and talking about how different it is, like we discussed there, how it's different per stream. It's different because it's on an ad tier, or it's a free tier or a premium, or what playlist it's on, was passive listening, all that kind of stuff. So there was a protest, a series of protests actually, called Justice at Spotify, where a lot of artists, independent musicians who, you know, have spent a year without live performance income and really like to galvanize people to do this, they commenced a series of protests called Justice at Spotify at the platform's offices around the world. In LA, people including Julia Halter and members of the newly formed Union of Musicians and Allied Workers went to Spotify's office. Julia Halter read out the demands, among them increasing payments to rights holders to just a penny per stream. So for context, so we're saying a Spotify stream currently is between 0.003 and 0.005. So we're talking about moving that to 0.01, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So 1 penny as opposed to a third of a penny, or half of a penny is what could be at the moment.
A halfpenny.
So the other thing about that is that, you know, major labels also have different deals in terms of their rates and what they get back, and they probably get more. They would do get more than an independent artist who's, say, putting music up on Spotify through DistroKid or in a TuneCore or whatever it is that...
is that how you say that? DistroKid? Is that how you say it? I've never said it out loud before.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I've just never heard it. I read it and my brain just goes... I just skip over it entirely, you know, like when you're reading a fantasy book and you're like, I don't know what anyone's name is.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah. But that's, yeah, I mean, so that's why there's a lot of things happening, like in the UK there's a broken record, Justice and Spotify protests, and then the latest development in terms of the streaming world is that Apple Music have responded to the criticism about streaming. And while they're not as big in terms of the market share, they do, their payouts are usually a bit better because there's no free tier with Apple Music. You have to be a paid subscriber. The argument overall is that really streaming is too cheap. It's too cheap for anyone to, $9.99 to stream any song in the world per month is still really no money at all. So, and that's, you know, one of the problems it has. Spotify itself, as a problem in terms of how it's set up, it is not trying to make money, and oftentimes Spotify loses money. But what it is trying to do is gain users, because in the tech world, that's exactly how, you know, the more users you have, the more value you have as a company on the stock market, all those kind of things. And that means then that is what dictates what, you know, Spotify's value, as opposed to how much it is.
And how much it can grow. It's in the tech world, it's not about how valuable you are now. It's about how valuable you are projected to be this time next year, this time 5 years, and what that percentage growth rate is going to be. So it can never stop, it can never stand still, and therefore Spotify and these sorts of companies, even both within and outside the music industry, never have a chance to kind of stand still, take stock, or even look at things like ethics, you know. Yeah. It's just percentage growth over and over and over and over again. That's all it is.
Spotify's stock price is actually up 150% over the last year since the pandemic as well. But the problem is that the royalty payments have not gone up in kind as well. The argument has been that they've got lower. And it's not the case that, because, you know, there's often a criticism that people make is that, oh, we've too many artists, so that's why no one's getting it. Like, there's too many artists looking for a piece of the pie. That's not the case.
That is true to an extent, but it is not. Spotify is under absolutely no obligation to pit all of these artists against each other. The more and more I read about this, the more I can't understand why they can't organize their revenue and their payouts to artists based on whether they're releasing new music, whether they're a legacy artist, whether they're like, or how much of a monopoly do the big three labels have? Is it, could there be a system in which there is where smaller labels are incentivized to come on Spotify, where they'll maybe make a little bit extra than the major labels will? There is just absolutely no there's no evidence that Spotify are even remotely interested in supporting new artists, new music, or independent music, or anything like that. I have an argument to make against Spotify.
Before we get to there, can I just finish just a bit about the aftermath of all this stuff? Sorry, just I meant to say, with Apple Music, they put out an open letter themselves and committed to increasing the average the stream to 1 penny per stream for individual paid plans. So they were committing to that. And then, like, the other thing is all this, like, the other things that have angered people in the last couple of years, especially with Spotify, everyone's talked about how Spotify is talking about pivoting to an audio platform. So therefore, you know, where it gets your podcasts, and you're like, you know, this podcast can be heard on Spotify, for example. But it has acquired production companies who make podcasts like Gimlet and Anchor, signed production contracts with like Prince Harry and Meghan, Barack and Michelle Obama, all that kind of stuff. Exclusive deals. Joe Rogan gave
like a ridiculous amount of money to Joe Rogan. 100
million, apparently.
100 million.
So they're willing to pay for talent, but, you know, in terms of getting artists.
And Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, unlike the rights to music, you know, Spotify doesn't own the rights to music, but its podcast investment will be their original content, like Netflix. So that's kind of what they're hoping to do. And then late last year, they launched an initiative which had a lot of criticism, which was described as a promotional recording royalty rate, that you could have a song played automatically after in playlists or in autoplays, for example, kind of like a focus track. Say you have a new release out and you listen to 20 tracks on a playlist, and that playlist stops, and then the next song would be yours. To do that, you get a reduced royalty rate. So there was a lot of criticism around that, because a lot of people said it was like the 80s when payola was in radio, where people were paying literally to get their song on air. And when you have a huge company like Spotify, basically, you know, not to say that people don't listen to Apple Music and Tidal, but I mean, they don't to the same level.
I mean, they don't listen to Tidal.
No, Tidal. Yeah, they don't. Sorry.
They don't. Yeah, no one has ever used Tidal.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I think, if I remember correctly, I think Craig Fitzpatrick from the No Encore podcast had a thing where he had a Tidal subscription and he kept forgetting to delete it or to cancel it or something. So he's I think, the only person I know who's ever used Tidal.
It looks like one of those dodgy things now that you wouldn't be able to get out of. You're just like, I'm stuck paying this forever. But Spotify is the major one. But there has been some other developments recently, and they are worth talking about. I mean, as an example, in the last year, in terms of positives, we've seen, you know, for independent music, Bandcamp Friday, once a month, every month since the pandemic started. Bandcamp has been waiving the revenue that they make off every sale on the platform, waiving it for a whole day, once a month. And that has really, you know, enabled artists to make a huge amount of money, and way more money than they'd ever make on Spotify in a year.
First Bandcamp day, which I think they announced it on Paddy's Day last year, and then it was the next Friday when they announced that they were going to waive the fees. They take around 10 to 15% of each sale on the site. So they were waiving that 10 to 15%. Artists on Bandcamp made $4.3 million that Friday, which is 15 times more than the revenue that the site makes on a typical Friday. It's unbelievable. And the fact that they've kept it up and they've been doing it, I don't know if it's monthly, but there have been like semi-regular Bandcamp Fridays that have happened.
Yeah, I've
always bought something on it. I haven't actually, I think maybe once I bought something on Bandcamp that wasn't on the Bandcamp Friday, but now I make sure to go and check when it is. It's a fantastic initiative. But yeah. Yeah.
And I would, I think, you know, we all got kind of caught up in the same way that, like, for example, Record Store Day, people start doing special releases and stuff like this, you know. I mean, I would also say to people who are actually wanting to support the artists on Bandcamp Friday, buy their albums, buy something that you actually want. Not like you didn't. There's a lot of artists trying to do special Bandcamp Friday releases, and that's cool and all. But like, don't forget about like the bands that you've been listening to for years that maybe you haven't got around to buying something from. That is a good way to do it. Like, because it can be quite overwhelming on Bandcamp Friday. It's been so successful that it's actually Bandcamp Fridays are so they're so successful that it actually means that people. Are trying really hard to get their do new releases and stuff like that, but actually,
and that costs money.
Yeah, so and that costs money.
You want to make sure that you're supporting the artist without also putting a lot of pressure on the artist to create new special shiny things for you. Do you know what I mean?
So it's the first Friday every month. It is May 7th, 2021 is the next one, Bandcamp Friday. Separate to that then, SoundCloud, which, you know, SoundCloud is a bit of a sad story in my head, like, which is maybe a bit unfair, but like it was a huge discovery platform. I still use it, but it really seemed to drop off in terms of usage. It's still used as a place to put new tracks, but you know, artists now would go, oh, will you share my Spotify, not my SoundCloud? Problem with SoundCloud is it got the major labels wanted them to pay the licensing issue, pay the huge licensing, and they couldn't really sustain both you know, a new discovery platform and then also have the legitimate major label artists on there without. And so, but they announced last month that they have rolled out a new revenue model based on fan-powered royalties. So what does that mean? They say they have 175 million users per month, 76 million active monthly users. So this fan-powered royalty structure aims to level the field for independent artists by delivering money the service makes from listeners. So if you have a subscription to SoundCloud, the idea is, and this is the user-centric model that many people want Spotify to go towards, where your $9.99 is divided up based on what you listen to that month, and that money goes directly to those artists that you listen to, not to Ed Sheeran, not to Drake if you don't listen to Drake, not to whoever else is top of the charts or like at the moment. The money goes directly to the person that you've been listening to, and that's not how this works currently at the moment.
I think a lot of people who use Spotify think that that's how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
So, a lot of people think that.
Yeah, there's a fallacy argument there that people are like, yeah, yeah, stream their music on Spotify. You still hear it a lot. And he's like, that's not really...
Stream, I mean, folklore. Yeah. It's like, Taylor Swift does not need us to stream folklore. She's doing fine. She's getting a big, big, big piece of that pie at the end of the month.
Yeah.
You know, so she'll be okay.
So that is a good positive example, because it shows, while maybe SoundCloud isn't as big as what it could be or should be at this point now, it does show that there are alternatives to the pool model that's paid out based on its share of total streams, as opposed to, you know, a percentage base of, which is a tiny, tiny percentage in the grand scheme of things. Imagine your money like actually directly went to the person that you were only listened to. It's a simple concept.
What a concept. Okay, so something when we talk about the problems with Spotify, I think a lot of the conversation is centered around artists. I think rightfully so, but Spotify is also a product that a lot of us pay for, or a lot of us pay for via ad sales and revenue and so on. So I want to talk about some problems with Spotify from the point of view of the listener, and the way that Spotify is set up is not something that I believe to be a positive kind of user experience and listening experience. The service that Spotify provides for its customers is, like a lot, like most of the tech world, different to what we actually perceive or understand it to be. I mean, you can kind of think about it. It's not as sinister as this, but there's a comparison to be made with how we initially kind of went into social media a little bit blind and not truly understanding what it was that we were signing up for. I think Spotify is kind of the same. We mentioned there the disparity between what we think we're doing, which is paying $9.99 a month to the artist we like, and actually what is actually happening, that my $9.99 is probably going to Drake and Taylor Swift and nobody else. And Spotify, I mean, if you take, for example, playlisting on Spotify, playlisting on Spotify is based in some part on the kind of like the mixtape model, not mixtapes that Denise Tyler releases, but mixtapes as in like a tape that you would have made for a friend. It's recommendations from you to a friend or from a friend to you, burned onto a CD, recorded onto a cassette and passed around as, hey, you might like this. And, you know, as people, we love finding music through recommendations, especially recommendations from a friend, especially recommendations from somebody who knows us and understands our tastes. And I think our understanding of the algorithms within Spotify is that, you know, they will have you believe that your playlists are being curated based on your listening preferences, which is true, but only kind of. It's only partly true. Spotify is not interested in whether or not you discover new music, and it is not good at letting you discover new music. It's actually really, really bad at letting you discover new music. Its one and only goal is to keep you on Spotify. It doesn't matter a damn what you listen to, whether you have found your new favorite band or whether you just stream lo-fi beats to chill or relax to for 12 hours in a row. It has absolutely no incentive to introduce you to new music. And the more I kind of engage with and think about the mood section of Spotify, the more kind of freaked out by all of this I go. Like, you see these playlists in the mood section of Spotify that are created and curated to replace radio. Spotify, in the US at least, is aiming to be the number one competitor of radio. And a lot more people, a larger percentage of the population listen to the radio in the US than they do here, or in the UK. So they're really, really gunning for that. And they're doing that by making playlists for every single moment of your life. So are you having your morning coffee? Here's a playlist. Here's some songs to sing in the shower. Here's some songs for your commute. Oh, you're at work. Here's some music for concentration or studying. Here's music for the drive home. Here's music for your run or for the gym. Music to relax to. Music to fall asleep to. Repeat. And that's how they're kind of forming this basis of just keep listening, keep passively listening. You wake up in the morning, you turn on Spotify, and if you're not the kind of person who wants to go and discover new things, then you can just passively let it play all day, and there will be a mood for everything. And it's kind of fun. Like my housemate and I, whenever we find a specific mood that it's kind of like a really, really freaky one that happened before was I got a suggestion for PMS playlist at a very spookily accurate time of the month, and I was like, okay. That's I don't like that. Don't do that. Okay. That's really spooky. But anyway, so it does set Spotify up. This sort of model sets Spotify up to be a really big competitor to radio, because you don't need to touch that dial. Whatever mood or situation you're in, there's a playlist for that. In the States, whenever I say in America, it always, I don't know, it always sounds funny. In the States, artists can receive up to 50% royalties from what's being played on the radio. So if you leave the radio on all day, you're probably supporting artists better than you are if you leave Spotify on all day. And that, all of that, is if you even make it onto that playlist as an artist. And most artists don't. You might be clicking into an indie playlist, say, like in indie feel-good tunes. You've seen all these. The chances that you're actually going to find independent artists on that playlist are extremely slim. The chances of finding independent artists on rap playlists, hip-hop playlists, R&B playlists, pop playlists, extremely slim. Spotify haven't set up these playlists to help you discover new things. They've set them up so that you can switch off from the pressure of choosing to listen to and when and why and so on. And so this kind of algorithmically collated playlists that aren't, you know, gathered by a human. They have a lot of problems, and we now enter the gender representation portion of my rant.
Before we get to that, can I just ask about...
Like, how dare you speak over me, you man? just before we get to your little woman bit.
No, I just don't want to get... I meant to ask a question two minutes ago, and it's got to the point now where I'm like... Okay, with about the new music playlist stuff, right? Mm. Do you really, you said there, you made a very bold statement about, you know, Spotify doesn't care about new music.
It doesn't care about you discovering new music.
Right, but then that's my question. Like, you're looking at New Music Friday, Release Radar, Discover Weekly. Mm-hmm. For people like myself and yourself and people listening to this podcast who will delve into music that's released every week and who want to hear new stuff and who are actively seeking music. I think that Spotify does a very good job for us in terms of discovery.
What I will say to you is... spend a week listening to your Discover Weekly. So there's kind of two. There's New Music Friday and just Discover Weekly. New Music Friday.
New Music Friday is the big, you know, public playlist. Everybody wants on Friday.
Yeah.
So Release Radar is like all the artists you follow. And then Discover Weekly is the stuff you may enjoy, which I generally don't vibe with most of the time.
Okay, exactly. Right. So what I'll say about those things are the Discover Weekly, which is curated algorithmically to you. How often do you look at your Discover Weekly and actually find a new artist that you've never heard of before? Out of the 20 tracks in that, how many tracks or artists do you already know? I'd wager it's about 15 of them. I reckon there's five.
I can look at it now and I can tell you how many artists I already know. But I think my problem is my data is probably pretty skewed because of how I listen to it, you know?
Well, sure. Okay, so my next point on that is the artists that they are serving you in that are not, they're not interested in giving you the artists that you will like the best. They're giving you the artists that are more likely to get higher streams from people. So more successful artists, they're not going to serve you in that playlist an artist who they think is only going to get a little teeny few streams because they don't have a huge following or whatever. If it's between, like, if it's for me, say, if it's between like London Grammar's new song and an artist who I've never heard of, but who has released something this week, who would be within the kinds of genres that I listen to, who sounds a bit like other things that I like, but it doesn't really have a following yet, they're going to give me London Grammar. So that's what I mean when I say that they're not interested in you finding new music. They're interested in you finding new music from artists that you already follow.
Yeah, well, maybe, I mean, that's kind of what Release Radar is supposed to be, but Discover Weekly...
but that's what Discover Weekly does.
My point is about, like, I've heard Moody Man is on it. I've listened to loads of Moody Man. Viagra Boys, Jane Weaver, whose album I was listening to very recently. Kasha, who's was formerly known as... Bonzai is on it too. So yeah, John Grant is on it here this week.
John Grant's
now,
on it.
I must actually go and look and listen to all of those. Discover Weekly.
It's my data.
Oh,
I made some data.
But I would, you know, the other thing is that's been lost in our conversation here, just about the new music stuff, is that it actually does have a great effect for a new artist when they are on those playlists. I've seen with LaBoom, the band I manage, how they have been on New Music Friday and they've got all these passive plays as well from, you know, dance and workout playlists and stuff like that.
Yes,
and you see,
but my point is that they are not there because Spotify wants you to discover them. They're there because of other factors. That's my point.
Yeah, there's a whole other like conversation here about, like, you know, the tapestry of how music should fit together on Spotify and how it sounds like and how you can't.
I'm
going to
get to that.
Too jarring. Okay, back to your point.
Thank you.
Take the floor, please.
Okay, so we now come to the gender representation portion of of this podcast. Spotify is constantly under fire for kind of gender representation across playlisting in particular. I had a little look. Now, I've only done two little data collections because I find data scary. One of them was a playlist that I went into moods. And then it was like, what kind of stuff do you want to listen to? And I clicked into rock. And the first playlist there was rock classics. Rock Classics has 135 male artists on it, okay, and 11 women. Do you see what I'm holding up there?
Yeah, that is a crossed off list. What do you call that?
Like you would on a prison wall, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then a dash through. 135 to 11. There's also a really major issue, and I checked it with this, where if you click into the 11 women on this, if you click into their artist profiles, the majority of their suggested artists, and in one or two cases, all of the suggested artists are male. So related artists skewing male, whether you're listening to a woman or not. So if you're listening to a male artist, almost all of the suggested artists are going to be male. And if you're listening to a woman artist, it's very, very unlikely that it's going to be majority women in the suggested artists. There has been a lot of studies about this that I've been reading today, and I've checked it with like my own playlists and stuff, and I can also kind of throw my small little data set into the ring there. My Discover Weekly, and I listen to a lot of women on Spotify, and I don't think that this is this way because I don't listen to women. But my Discover Weekly this week was 28-3 men to women. Wow, which like even if I did only listen to men, that's unacceptable. That's just not that I found that really, really, really surprising. I'm a person who listens to a lot of female artists. So like everything else, when you find you're finding pay disparity really between men and women ingrained in the actual building blocks of the site, in the recommender systems and these machine learning algorithms, the money that is being doled out to independent artists will skew male because men are more likely to be played because of the way that these playlists are set up. So, and it's interesting as well when you look at things like related artists, things like race and gender are really taken into consideration when recommending related artists. Kind of as well as sound, but I think that's really a problem, because then you end up in a situation where black artists are being kind of lumped together in one recommendation stream, I suppose, women in another recommendation stream, Asian musicians in another recommendation stream, and not as you might actually want or understand you're listening to music, actually, you know, grouping them by genre or label or the fact that they sound similar. So it means that when you do go onto your rock classics radio, you are only going to hear men. You're not going to hear very, very many. I didn't check how many artists of color were on the rock classics, but I think there was maybe two. There were no black women. I think of the two or so male artists that were on there, or black artists that were on there, they were men. And I mean, that's a problem. And then according to these data trackers, BuzzAngle Music, more than 99% of audio streaming is of the top 10% most streamed tracks, which means that 1% music streaming is all of the rest of it. And I think we have to ask ourselves why that is. And I can only conclude that is because of these algorithms that are supposedly recommending new music to us, when really they're just playing us the most popular music in the genres that we've suggested that we like. So my Spotify knows that I like indie guitar music and that I like, you know, whatever it is that I like. I'm going to be recommended new artists in this, but really I'm only going to be recommended the top artists in those genres, and they will play me more men than women in those genres. And I mean, you can ask yourself who loses out in that. We all know by this stage it's not white men. This impacts who is given space elsewhere in the industry, because we know from our conversations in Ireland about radio and about Irish radio over the past year that Irish radio stations are paying attention to streaming numbers when it comes to choosing who to playlist on the radio. We also know that Spotify streams and radio play also impact things like festival lineups and performances and bookings for gigs. Major labels are paying attention to the kinds of artists that get playlisted, whether it's their own artists or from other labels. The artists who are getting the big streaming numbers, and those labels are making their business decisions according to that. Justin Young from The Vaccines told the Financial Times that Spotify data helps them to determine set lists for their tour shows based on what songs are popular in different parts of the world in different cities. So a set list for one city might be completely different to another city. I'm not saying that's particularly sinister in itself, but it's showing you the impact that this new listening model is having on actually like what music is being played and to an extent what music is being made. And it changes how we listen to music. You and I know like the music press is dying. Listeners are faced with this expanse of available music that is so overwhelming that it's simply just easier to listen to either your favorite music when you do want to engage with music or to give into a mood playlist when you don't necessarily want to be challenged. And there's no incentive to discover because you can put on your Discover weekly playlist, fool yourself into thinking that you're discovering new music, but you're not. You're being served music collated by a biased algorithm that is by its design unchallenging.
Come see the bias inherent in the system. Come see the bias inherent in the system.
Exactly. You know, and so it is important, I think, when we talk about the impact on Spotify on artists, that we don't just limit the discussion to money. And I think we should broaden it to how streaming platforms actually shape cultural value. So by organizing these artists, like I said, by gender and race or over genre, or by promoting only what's popular or only what is probably going to work based on current trends. It turns music into something that is just happening near you, you know, rather than an experience that actually ought to be sought out. I will not be using the mood feature on Spotify anymore. I've been thinking about this over the past few days while I've been kind of looking into all of this stuff. I'm not using that anymore. I don't like it. It's scary to me, and I don't want to have these kind of passive experiences anymore. And so for people who would argue that they are, you know, discovering new music from their Discover Weekly playlists, to that I say brilliant. If you're finding new artists, that's amazing. But what I would maybe suggest trying is going onto Bandcamp and just have a look at how different the experience of discovering new music on Spotify and discovering new music on Bandcamp is. Because when you discover new music on Spotify, it's very likely that it's going to be a kind of a milquetoast, like, yeah, this is easy, this is fine, this is something that I'll probably like, and it's not going to challenge you very much. When you discover new music on Bandcamp, you can find something that really challenges you. You can find something that you have never heard before. You can find...
Yeah, you can go to somewhere like Niler9.com where we do all that work for you.
Exactly. Well, you but that's what I mean. It's like you can go and look at your favorite independent blogs, or you can go and see what's on Pitchfork this week or whatever it might be. But I would recommend trying to think a bit more critically about where you are discovering music. There's nothing wrong with passively listening to music. It sounds like I am giving out about passively listening to music. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But don't fool yourself into thinking you're discovering new music when you're not. When you are actually, like, think about how many times are you being recommended a song that isn't in English, or a song that is not from the West of the world. You know what I mean? Like, how much music and what is the scope of the music you are actually listening to, and how does Spotify fit into that? Because I argue it does not fit into it at all. And I think that we should abandon the moods playlists completely because it turns us into passive listeners.
Can I ask you a question? Am I a bad person if I create a mood playlist for myself?
Okay, so this is the next thing I wanted to say, because as some listeners will know, I make playlists on Spotify, right? I don't believe it's hypocritical, and I don't believe it's hypocritical when you do it, Niall, because
Great.
So people who have subscribed to my Substack, they'll know that I write a piece of personal writing and then I create a playlist that goes with that piece of personal writing. A, it's not there so that people can discover new music. If they want to discover new music, that's great. Or if they do discover new music from it, rather, that's great. And B, it's to serve the other thing. It's to work in tandem. C, it's a human being creating it. And these songs mean a lot to me. And I'm curating them in the same way that I would be a mixtape that I'm handing over to somebody. I'm not doing it as a tastemaker. I'm not doing it as somebody with any influence on what's going to happen to these artists. So it's completely different to Spotify claiming that they're going to help you discover new music or find new music, or here's the rock classics. Like, according to who? According to who are these the rock classics? 11 women and 135 men. Get fucked. Okay, I'm done. Sorry.
Okay. That's great. I enjoyed your rant immensely.
I'm done.
I would like to add, yeah, thanks for also clearing me up in terms of my guiltiness.
Don't feel guilty
playlists.
About that.
I love making
Not
playlists.
At all. Make playlists. They're amazing. And God, when they come from human beings, they're meaningful and beautiful. Just don't passively put on those sunny garden Tuesday afternoon playlists. I think those are bad for our brains.
I wouldn't go near them myself, but because I have too much music to be listened to anyway. But I'm sure there are a lot of people. The problem is that Spotify is trying to be the answer to everybody's problem. It's like, what we listen to, that's the answer, no matter who you are, no matter what level of music you're interested in. I hate that. What I do hate about Spotify is that they've removed any of the— they used to have some editorial on the browse page in terms of like new releases and stuff like that. You look at their bloody new releases nowadays, all you get is here's new releases, and you're like, okay, today is like AJ Tracy's album, Fred Again, all the major label stuff, London Grammar, and then you get down to like the shows you singles, and you're like, I don't want to see that's not a new release, that's not a single.
What always comes up on my new releases is like oh, this new fire track from Johann Sebastian Bach. And I'm you should know that that's not a discovery for me. Like, just because somebody has, re-recorded one of the Goldberg variations, that's not a new discovery. I don't know. I think their algorithm is not nearly as clever as they think it is.
And it often you will, in your release radar, get a track from an artist who has the same name as somebody else. Who's the one a couple of weeks ago? God, I'm so hilarious. I wonder if I could find it. I put it in the Discord at the time.
Someone had the same name as like a huge artist and just got a load of streams?
Yeah, but like usually what happens is it goes up on the Friday and it disappears. Oh, Danny Brown. So it was an artist called Danny Brown, but it wasn't that Danny Brown. It was a very white Danny Brown and he had a country rock song called Man Sitting in the White House. That appeared on my release radar. I was like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, I would listen to the song Man Sitting in the White House by Danny Brown.
Oh, do you want to hear it?
Oh, this one. Yeah, go on. Sure. We haven't played any music this episode.
Danny Brown or Danny White? Which one is it?
Danny White.
Man Sitting in the White House. Here we go. This came on. I thought it was going to be Danny Brown. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Well, the election is over. It has come and gone. Now there's a man in the White House. I wonder for how long he has opened up the borders. Illegals are bloody and using our taxes to kill the young boy.
It's bad.
No greater sin. What happened to the thought of making a man?
He's using our taxes to kill the unborn.
Well, he gave me a laugh anyway.
Oh, my God. Oh my God, I have tears.
Danny
in my
Brown.
Eyes.
His so one
you,
song.
You just click play on that thinking, oh, I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, new Danny Brown track. And you're like, slide guitar all the way up. Like, nope, that's not happening.
Good. Good for that guy, you know?
Yeah, but it is kind of hilarious when that happens. I think it happened even last week to me. I was like, This is the same name as an artist that I've listened to before, but it's not who you think it is. Like, I think that it almost happens every week.
Well, there was also those, we should say, allegations, because Spotify does deny that they've done this, but the allegations that Spotify was uploading songs that were by, like, we're commissioning songs that were not by real artists to kind of flesh out their mood playlists.
Yeah, so all those chill playlists.
Like, a lot in the, like, chill, lo-fi concentration playlists, which I do dip into sometimes, or I won't be anymore, I'll make my own. But
I have one.
This kind of, I'll listen to your one. Perfect. But yeah, so there was allegations that they were fleshing those out with kind of not real music, or which is funny. And
well,
I won't say whether or not I believe it or not, but yeah, I mean, okay, so maybe we can talk about whether there can or cannot be ethical music consumption under capitalism, i.e. what can we do as consumers, because I think it's probably unrealistic to ask people to cancel their Spotify accounts. I won't be canceling my Spotify account. I will continue considering it, but right now I'm not in a position where I can pay for all of the music that I need to listen to. And I don't actually think that streaming is necessarily a bad model, but what I am going to try to do going forward is to listen to big artists on Spotify. If I need to listen to Taylor Swift or anything like that, I'll do that on Spotify. And if I'm listening to Irish artists or independent artists or smaller label stuff, I will try to do that on Bandcamp. And then, so when you listen to something a lot on Bandcamp and you haven't bought it yet, Bandcamp will kind of nudge you every now and then. They'll send you a little email and be like, hey, have you thought about maybe purchase, like, if you're listening to, like, the new Wyvern Lingo, say, they might send you a little email being like, hey, you've been listening to this, do you want to maybe buy it? And a lot of the time you might be like, no, can't afford that, and you cancel the email.
There's the one with the little pop-up and it's like, now is the time to open thy wallet, and you're like, press no, it like the heart breaks, and you're like,
but you know, there's been quite a few albums, like digital albums, that I've bought for like a few quid that I've bought because of those little notifications and those little emails that I wouldn't, that, you know, Spotify's not doing that. Spotify's not encouraging me to buy music. It's discouraging me to buy music, really. So that's what I'm going to try and do going forward, is I'm going to try to first buy music and listen to the music that I've bought, then listen to music on Bandcamp and other places that might give a bit more revenue to artists, and then for bigger artists I can listen on Spotify.
Yeah, we haven't even gone into the YouTube thing and anything like that. Like, that's another big problem.
I was listening to some Joanna Newsom the other day, and I was reading one of the comments underneath, and there was a guy who was just like, Joanna Newsom's the reason why I occasionally close Spotify and open YouTube. I was like, yeah, same. But YouTube might be for a different day, actually.
Yeah. I will say there's a couple of different alternative models that we're seeing being touted, mostly small fan or artist led. There's one called Marine Snow, which was formed by the guy, his name is Tony Lashley. He is a founder of Marine Snow, but he's also a marketing and operations at Blonded. So there's that Frank Ocean reference again. And he is, hasn't launched yet, but marine-snow.co is a social music platform. But instead of focusing on having everything that exists in music, what it is trying to do, or what it will try and do, I'm on a waiting list for it. I don't even know if it's active at the moment, but what it's going to do is going to pay artists up front for exclusivity to be featured on the platform for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So it's kind of like, think, or maybe a few months, it's kind of like maybe a curated selection of music that they think is worth your time. Whether, cool. you know, that you vibe with that, that depends on what you get from it. But it also has a vertical, a social media, social network angle as well. So you can actually talk. You know, the way Spotify took away the messaging system it used to have on the platform when people could just message you randomly, which it has taken away. So that kind of social aspect.
They should take that away from basically everything. That sounds good. But there's also, you know, there's an issue there with... ensuring longevity with artists as well. Because
I'm not sure how they, you know, but it is they're proposing a different
sounds
model,
like a good way to discover artists.
If you want to listen to more about Maureen Snow, you can listen to Holly Herndon and Matt Dreyer's podcast Interdependence, where they interviewed Tony Lashley in one of the most recent episodes about Maureen Snow and the idea behind it. I want to get Liz Petty on the show soon. Liz is the writer that writes a lot about Spotify. She used to be actually our intern in State Magazine in Dublin. And so she's a legend. And last time I was over in New York, I actually interviewed her for the podcast about streaming and Spotify. But whatever happened is my recording didn't work. So we weren't able to use it. It was just awful quality. So I had to leave it. But I do mean to go and talk to her again. Obviously, she's been in a lot of articles about Spotify, criticizing Spotify for The Baffler. So you can go find Liz's thoughts on all sorts of stuff about Spotify and the playlisting and algorithm and how it works and pretty much anything you can think of. True Liz, I saw a small streaming project called Catalytic Sound, which is a project run by a group of 30 artists who are kind of breaking away from the per stream payment models by splitting the monthly artist cut from subscriptions 30 ways for 30 artists, regardless of the stream count. So that is Catalytic Sound. That is like an experimental independent musicians who are trying this service. So I think
I have another suggestion, which is at home in Ireland, there's I've two suggestions for artists here. One is was suggested to me by Cullum in the Discord, which is Praxis, which is a new trade union for artists in Ireland. It's a trading initiative. They say, "We define artists in the widest sense of the world. The union is committed to giving artists strategic power in their places of work and improving their living and working conditions. And some of their objectives include to build a united, active and growing membership, give members a strong voice in their workplace, improve the living and working conditions of their members, build an arts community based on solidarity." So you can go on to the Praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S website to see more of that. And also is another option for both artists and people who want to support the music industry is to support the call for the universal basic income for artists. It means kind of support for all, but artists are very, very good place to start. I mean, universal basic income is something that I personally believe should be a thing for everybody, but artists are a good place to start. Minister Catherine Martin, who is the Minister for Arts, Music, the Gael Talk, all of that huge long list of things that she that poor woman was put in charge of. Also a former music teacher and singer, she wrote a very interesting piece for the Journal about calling for a universal basic income for artists. And she highlights that, you know, artists are professionals like the rest of us who need money to survive. She does highlight the work done during the pandemic by the government in terms of the live performance support scheme, as well as the additional funding for things like the Arts Council and Budget 2021 and the wage subsidy schemes. And also she does head an arts and culture recovery task force, which in a report published last year recommended this universal basic income. And just to kind of note on that, 30% of artists in Ireland make less per year than the national minimum wage. And because of the way that a lot of artists kind of work, like maybe sometimes they're freelance, maybe sometimes they're PAYE, maybe sometimes they're completely unemployed. So it's we do need to tackle the problem with artists not being paid, not just by looking at places like Spotify and not just by looking at, you know, the market or the free market, quote unquote, but we need to actually look at policymakers and regulations that could be introduced to just make it a safer place for artists to work. And
that comes back to...
Go on.
Sorry, and that comes back to the broken record idea of trying to enshrine into law a sort of regulation or fairness in terms of the record label streams and deals. And it's all, look, there's a lot of talk about fairness for artists suddenly, and it's a really good thing, isn't it? I mean, just to see that all of a sudden.
Things like Bandcamp Friday and all of these things are brilliant, and we should absolutely be supporting them. But it also does highlight the need for kind of good faith actors in the free market, which is not really a place that we really want to be. Bandcamp are under no obligation to make sure that their artists are financially supported. We're happy that they do that, but there's no one is putting that onus on them. They're doing it because they're a sound group of people. Until there's proper regulation by governments who support their homegrown talent, we are absolutely at the mercy of the markets. It starts with universal basic income. It also needs to be a support system in place to support independent radio, to support music journalists and blogs, arts journalism, live performances. Spotify is a major issue, but it's not the only one, and it's far from being the biggest enemy of the artist in this conversation and the biggest enemy of the listener in this conversation. It's an example of, you know, capitalism working well, and we have to ask ourselves if that's the kind of world that we want to live in, redistribute the wealth. That's my last. And also, if you can't afford to support artists, then tell your friends about them. Like, post about them on social media. There's nothing like getting a text from a friend being like, hey, here's a band I think you'll like. Nobody hates those texts. Everyone loves those texts. They're the best texts. So do that. Like, text a friend who's never heard of Pillow Queens and just send them the Pillow Queens album on Bandcamp and they might buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, gigs will come back. And, you know, I'm getting a bit of a flutter by putting some money down on some gigs, especially from the Irish artists who are announcing gigs at the moment. And so do that as well. You give yourself something to look forward to. And
I had a gig ticket come in the post yesterday.
Me too.
I was like, ooh.
What was it?
What was yours for?
It might be for the same thing, because it was for dry cleaning.
Dry cleaning in the Button Factory. Yeah. Yay. Okay, I will see you there. I had to, like, it was there and I was holding it and I was like, oh my God, I have to keep this safe until 2022. So I just like put it in a drawer. I told my housemates, I was like, okay, next year when I'm freaking out trying to find this ticket, please remember that it's in this drawer.
Yeah, I always put it in my bedside locker.
There you go. If you're ever burglaring Niall, that's where the real wealth is.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for joining us on this chat about streaming and Spotify and all the rest of it.
Do send us your thoughts. I'd like to hear that is what you have to say about that. Yeah, me.
And like, if you are on the Patreon, do sign up to the Discord. There's an invite link in your emails there. We're having great chats, as I said. You know, I don't ruin it too much by telling everybody what we're talking about, but like, it's been a lovely, for me, I find it's been a lovely space for to have an office almost. It's like my virtual office.
Yeah.
Drop in there, talk about whatever you want. And the fact that it's a live chat that isn't on Twitter or anything like that in private, it's been really, really good. Sutton, who on our Discord shared that I'd not seen it before, but The Story of 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton, the Vice documentary, which they also have one about Shaggy, the Thong Song, and Eiffel 65 Blue, which is where to watch. So I watched that last night. Yeah, lots to watch there. And you have some recommendations there as well, which I have to add and watch in the next few days.
I had a few.
Yeah. So there's a couple of those. Great. Okay. We'll be back in the next week or so. And that's it from us. Thanks for listening. And
take care.
You can always tell people about us as well. That was always appreciated. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, do that.
Do that. Because we did well on streams and downloads and stuff last week. So appreciate that. So keep going.
The week when I hardly say a word and everyone's like, oh, what a great podcast episode. Yeah, I'm
it's
not going to
read
too
the infectious
much into that,
nature of Italo Disco.
About that. 100% yeah. That. Yeah. Okay. Bye, everyone.
All right.
See you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.